Obituary.
Aaron Beck. Up off the couch. Aaron Beck, the psychiatrist who developed cognitive behavioural therapy, died on November 1st, aged 100.
By far the youngest of Aaron Beck's subjects in the very partial list of patients he had treated for anxiety and phobias in his book Cognitive Therapy and the Emotional Disorders, 1976, was an 8-year-old boy. This boy, after weeks in hospital with near-fatal septicemia, became horribly squeamish about blood, and the smell of ether would make him faint. How was he treated? By learning, whenever he felt faint, to focus on other things, even just naming all America's presidents in the right order. The feeling still followed him into adulthood, but he then confronted them head-on by going to Yale Medical School, where the smell of ether was more or less infused in the walls. The 8-year-old boy was himself, and that childhood experience was his first brush with the idea that human thinking moved on two parallel tracks, not conscious and deep subconscious, as Freud had taught, which was the accepted wisdom in the 1950s when he entered the field, but rational thoughts and automatic ones, both on the surface. Automatic thoughts were sometimes useful, as when he was driving the car and simultaneously composing the next lecture for his students at Penn University, where he was a professor for half a century. They told him to swerve at a bump or slow down without interrupting his flow of ideas. But such thoughts were often distorted, blocking out more rational explanations for the problems that inevitably cropped up in life. A man might fret, for example, that his wife had not said goodbye to him as he left for work. Did it mean she no longer loved him? Was he actually unlovable? The rational explanation might be that she had left milk boiling on the stove, but the negative thoughts crowded in first and could lead to full-blown depression. Just one misinterpretation could convince a beautiful woman that she was ugly and a teenager that she was fat, and the damage was done. Anxiety attacks and phobias were usually triggered not by the thing itself, such as a high balcony, but by a lively, negative, and statistically very unlikely thought of tumbling over the rail. He concluded that distorted surface thoughts, rather than Freud's long-buried childhood traumas and Oedipal desires, explained almost all emotional disorders. To each condition he applied scientific rigour and plain New England common sense, besides writing clear, simple manuals for therapists. As the years passed, his cognitive behavioural therapy, or CBT, was found to be widely effective, needing far fewer sessions than Freudian analysis, and lasting longer. It became, and remains, the most popular treatment for depression and anxiety in the Western world. His method was gentle and collaborative. He dressed nattily with colourful bow ties, and his bright blue eyes were kind. Rather than making his patients lie on a couch and free associate as Freudian analysts did, he invited them to sit at a small table just across from him, an intimate space that just had room for a large box of tissues. He was less a clinician than a friend who would help them sort things out together. Then, rather than staying silent, he asked constant questions, gently unpicking their thoughts to expose the distorted ones and plumbing his patients for evidence. The basis of CBT was empirical, and it was Socratic. You say you've lost everything, but what have you really lost? How likely is it that you would die if you went outside? When you told me that story, what was really going through your mind? That was his keystone question, finding the parallel tracks. Once the fallacies were exposed, patients could begin to help themselves. They were told to note their feelings day by day and to gather countervailing evidence to their negative thoughts. Severe depressives were trained in mastery by being given tasks which, though easy for most people, had become impossible for them. Getting out of bed, making a phone call. In 1952, he even successfully treated a young schizophrenic who was convinced he was being followed by government agents. "How would I know what they looked like to help you?" he asked the patient. The patient could not exactly say, but as he was asked each week to describe the agents, they became fewer and fewer until they disappeared. Hard though it was to credit, this revolutionizer of psychiatry had once been a fervent Freudian, but he became increasingly bothered by the lack of hard science in it, its mantras and ritualism, and its cult of celebrity practitioners. Depressives, for example, were said to have turned their hostility towards a parent inward on themselves, but his study of their dreams showed no more hostility there than in anyone else. Depressives and non-depressives alike might dream that they found only an empty Coke machine as they wandered in the desert. He wandered in the desert for a while himself, retreating into private practice, mocked by Freudians and attacked by pharmaceutical firms, whose profits from pills he threatened. In a trial in 1977, CBT showed better results than imipramine, the best antidepressant of the time. So he kept going, busily recording patient data in his own journal, Cognitive Therapy and Research, when no one else would publish him. He was quite certain he was right. But he was not immediately happy. For 40 years, he too checked his mood twice a day in the Beck Depression Inventory and stowed the results in his cellar. The fact was that, though he had a great job, a loving wife, and 4 beautiful children, one of whom, Judith, became a CBT clinician and co-founded his Beck Institute, he still suffered from acute self-criticism. He cared too much for approval and felt bound not to get it. The cure? Even more determined rationality. By the end of his life, nothing daunted his positive outlook. As a boy, his distorted thoughts about blood and ether had been corrected by the actual fact that he had not died and could busy himself with the future. As an old man, with his horizons narrowing, he had learned to see every mishap not as a loss or as a confirmation of some defect, but as an opportunity. If it started to rain just when he was going out, great. All the more time to get that next paper written and to spread the word still wider.